Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Welcome back. It's 12 after the hour. Thank you very much. Joining me, thanks for hanging out with me today on Happy Memorial Day, ladies and gentlemen. It is Memorial Day. It's the official start of the summer. And that's, you know what that means? That's driving season. And so my question to you is, are you going to be driving as much this summer as you have been? Are you modifying your vacation plans, your holiday plans for the summer because of the gas prices, which are now at a record high? Oil is at a record high level. Gas prices are at a record high. Oil profits, by the way, for the oil companies are at a record high. And somebody who's going to help us sort all this out and bring some order to this mayhem is our good friend Myron Ebell. And Myron is Director of Global Warming and International Environmental Policy at one of the organizations that we hold in very high esteem, the Competitive Enterprise Institute. Myron, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me, Jim.
Now, bring some sort of order to this mayhem, Myron.
Well, you know, the price of gas is very high. It's at an all-time high in real dollars, I believe, now.
Yep.
And it's because world demand continues to increase, and the supply system has had a hard time responding to it, and I think there are several reasons for that. One is, of course, a lot of the oil in the world is controlled by nationalized companies, by the petrostate, yep, like mm-hmm. Saudi Arabia, Venezuela. And, of course, it's in their interest to make as much money off their oil as they can,
yep,
so they're not particularly interested in raising their production. In the past, when demand has gone up, the big private companies have been able to, over time, respond. But that's getting harder and harder because there are so many political obstacles, particularly in this country, but not only in this country, to producing more oil. We have huge resources in this country, which are untapped because Congress has voted that they're off limits to production.
And right.
So we've got 85% of our offshore areas are closed to oil exploration. We've got tremendously huge resources off the coast of California, Southern California, off the coast of Florida. In fact, the Cubans have called in the Chinese oil companies to drill quite near off the coast of Florida.
So they're going to go sideways and go over and tap into our oil and gas, is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
They're going to start in Cuba's waters and kind of go down a little bit and then angle off sideways and get over into our oil. So whether we're losing oil off of our, may lose oil off of our coast, but we're not getting the benefit of it.
Yeah, and I believe if Mexico had a competent company, I mean, they have a nationalized company that's being run into the ground. If they had
right.
a competent company, they would be doing the same thing off the coast of Baja California,
right,
where there's a huge field that's, I believe, split between California and Mexico, or a potentially huge field. And so, you know, we have a problem. We want to use a lot of gasoline, but we don't want to produce very much of it because Congress says that's a bad thing. So,
and that's put our nation and our consumers and our businesses in jeopardy. And are they doing this because they think that's what Americans want, Congress?
Well, they're doing it because they know that's what special interests want, namely
right.
the environmental pressure groups. We
right.
have had, you know, when the Republicans controlled Congress up until January 2007, there were several votes to open up the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge in Alaska, a very small
right.
part of it right on the coast.
Anwar,
to oil and gas production. The Senate passed it and the House passed it, but unfortunately they always passed it in different bills, and it's so easy to obstruct things in Congress if you're determined, and they could never get around the parliamentary obstacles to getting
mm-hmm.
the same bill passed by both chambers and sent to the president. The House passed a great bill to open up the offshore areas and share the royalties equally with the states, which is one of the big stumbling blocks. If when oil is produced on federal land out west in New Mexico, say, or Wyoming, where there's a lot of oil, the state gets half of the federal royalty. So that's why Wyoming doesn't have an income tax. That's the largest item in the New Mexico treasury every year. So, but if it's off the coast of California, the state doesn't get any of the royalty the way the law is currently written. So the states have no real incentive to say, hey, let's go drill for oil.
Let me tell you an Anwar story.
Mm-hmm.
Some people were at my house visiting recently, and the lady was a highly educated, very smart lady, but she's also very favorable to the, you know, she's an environmentalist and a Sierra Club type person, and I love her, but she said this is an educated person, said this, we were talking about this issue. She said, well, George Bush wants to run the tundra. And I said, what do you mean? She said, he wants to ruin the tundra. I said, well, Tim, explain that. She said, he wants to drill for oil and ruin the tundra. She kept calling it the tundra.
Yeah.
Now, the tundra is like, you know, bigger than the United States. You know, the tundra is, and which country are you talking about? And I said, do you mean Anwar? And she said, yeah, that. I said, well, do you realize that Anwar is 384,000 square miles? And the area that they want to drill in is 2,000 square miles.
Yeah, you got that totally wrong. It's actually the area that they want to drill in, they want to only disturb. They want to confine the disturbance of the tundra to 2,000 acres.
Right. Is it acres? So I meant acres. What did I say, square miles?
Yeah.
I meant acres. Yeah. But my point is it's a tiny bit, but in her mind, this educated person, she talked about it, she wouldn't use the relationship. She said he wants to ruin the tundra.
Right. Well, of course, that's the talking point. They've been drilling up in Prudhoe Bay, which is also tundra, since the late 1970s. They produced a lot of oil there, and there is no major environmental damage. And in fact, the caribou, it was claimed that the caribou herd in Prudhoe Bay would go down once all these people were up there. But in fact, it's prospered. There are a lot more caribou there than there were in 1975.
Right. Well, and you know, of course, recently the polar bear has been put on the endangered species list.
Right, and that's
That's a political thing, right?
I believe so, because polar bear numbers keep going up, Jim.
They're going up. They're not going down, folks. That's the political part. I mean, these numbers are stubborn, aren't they? 20 after, we're going to be right back. When we come back, we want to talk to Myron about what you and I can do about this issue of making the United States less dependent upon foreign oil. Stand by. We'll be right back. We're back. It's 23 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. My websites are smallbusinessadvocate.com and askjim.biz. Use them to your advantage. Take advantage of all the things that we make available to you there for free, even on Memorial Day. Happy Memorial Day, everybody. Myron, what does Memorial Day mean to you? Myron Ebel is our guest, ladies and gentlemen. He's with Competitive Enterprise Institute. Myron, what does Memorial Day mean to you?
Well, it means that we need to remember all the people who sacrificed their lives for our country. And, I think it's interesting that these three-day weekends have become holidays rather than times to remember. But
yeah, yeah. What do you say to people who think that our only reason for going into Iraq was because of oil?
Well, if it was, then we should have been producing more oil by now. I just don't think that really had anything to do with it.
Yeah.
I do think that a strong case can be made against what we're doing there and why, but I don't think that is a good argument.
Right.
I mean, I think both sides have strong arguments, but I do not think the oil one is a strong argument.
Do you think that we're experiencing a commodities bubble, including oil, right now? I mean, it's hard for me to believe that demand has increased so much in the last 6 to 8 months that we've gone from $65 a barrel oil to double that. I can't believe that the world demand has increased that much. It's got to be some high level of this price is speculation. What do you think?
I do. I think there are two things there. I think one is that the collapse of the dollar has led to an increase in the price.
Because oil is denominated in dollars, isn't it?
Yes, and I think also that speculators are speculating against the dollar and putting their money into commodities, so that's driving the dollar down more and driving commodities up more. And I think yes, I do think there's a speculative bubble, and I think, you know, as you know, and as
do you think, do you think that bubble will burst soon, or bubbles burst, don't they?
Yeah, they do, like the housing bubble. But you know, as everybody on your who listens to your show knows, very small changes at the margin in a commodity that isn't very elastic, the demand for it isn't very elastic. That is, people need to drive; they need their gasoline. Very small changes can lead to huge shifts in prices, and I think that's what we've seen. You know, President Bush, I think, for example, was wrong to say that that filling the strategic petroleum reserve didn't have anything to do with the price of petroleum, because it was only 70,000 barrels a day, and we used 20 million barrels a day. Well, but at the margin, that very small changes can have very big effects. I think he was also wrong when he said, well, the ethanol mandate is not driving up the price of corn. It's only a very small percentage.
I don't believe that. He's wrong. Right. He's wrong about that.
He's wrong. I mean, and it's driven up the price of wheat and soybeans as well. And
exactly.
So, you know, the amount of corn that was used to go into ethanol last year, I'm not talking about nutrients. You still need vitamins and proteins and things, but just the calories. The calories that were diverted to ethanol would feed 250 million people for a year.
Right. Ethanol is not the future for alternative fuels, ladies and gentlemen.
No, there may be alternatives, but that ain't it. That's
I completely agree with you. I've learned that from you, Myron. I probably have.
No, I hear you read a lot. I know you're a smart guy. You're informed about some of my issues that I have.
tell us about Competitive Enterprise Institute.
Well, we're a nonprofit and nonpartisan public policy institute, and we work on regulatory issues from a free market perspective. And so, you've had many of us on to talk about a whole range of things: insurance and health care and
regulations,
drug administration,
our good friend Wayne Cruz on regulations and
on red tape and antitrust reform and those
CEI.org?
Yes.
CEI.org. Myron, what can we do as citizens? What can we do to improve the availability of oil to Americans, lower the price of oil, and maybe even make us less dependent upon foreign oil? American citizens, we can do things, can't we?
Absolutely. But, you know, we have to change the minds of people in Congress and in politics. We have to go to our elected representatives and our candidates and say, how did you vote on ANWR? How did you vote on the offshore bill, offshore oil bill? What do you think of these energy rationing bills on global warming, the so-called cap-and-trade bills? Lieberman-Warner is the main one right now. Sponsored by Senators Joe Lieberman and John Warner. McCain's a big supporter of cap-and-trade, as are the two other Democratic candidates. But McCain's been the leader in the Senate on cap-and-trade. If you think $4 a gallon gasoline is bad, wait till we get cap-and-trade. You're going to see...
Tell the audience what cap-and-trade means.
It means that you put a cap on the use of coal, oil, and natural gas. Those are the things that produce carbon dioxide when you burn them.
This is a mini Kyoto Accord. Is that what you're talking about?
Well, it's probably bigger than Kyoto. What they're talking about. They're talking about getting to 60% below current emissions levels by 2050, or 80% below in some of the bills. Now, so we're talking about energy rationing. People would be forced to use higher priced energy. They would be forced by the cost increases to just use less energy. And so, you know, in Europe they have $8 a gallon gasoline,
right?
And that's largely because they've raised the taxes to do something about global warming.
And you
so that's
think
what you're looking
you think
at.
Regardless of which who becomes president, we're going to have cap and trade?
No, I think reality is catching up with energy rationing.
And you're going to continue to join us in the future to keep us posted on this, right?
I certainly will, Jim.
Thank you, Myron. Myron Ebell, ladies and gentlemen, Director of Global Warming and International Environmental Policies at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. Thanks, Myron. See you next time. Quick break.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.